Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I'm very lucky I get the very best on the planet on this radio show. If you're a dog trainer, you do know this name, Ken Ramirez, Chief Training Officer, Executive Vice President of the Karen Pryor Clicker Training. And in fact, Ken Ramirez, former Chicagoan and for many years, the chief trainer at the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Hi, Steve. How are you? Thanks for inviting me to be here.
It's my honor to have you on the radio with me again. It's been way too long. And you did one post on Instagram that intrigued me. It was all about punishment. And you explained in, Instagram time, what punishment really is, what punishment really isn't, as far as raising our companion animals. I know that you could give, and I'm sure you have, 5-hour talks on all of this, but let's condense it down. And I think that part of your point is that most pet parents think of punishment as one thing, and technically, from a scientific point of view, the author of a book, by the way, among your many books, Animal Training, Successful Animal Management Through Positive Reinforcement, a book that I believe if there were still phone books available and you compiled the New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago phone books on top of one another, I think this book is larger than that.
It is a pretty big book. It was sort of designed as a textbook to really help people understand how to apply positive reinforcement over a long term in a setting with animals. And so it was definitely longer than your normal book.
And may I say, I'm a proud owner of that book.
But thank you.
But people who have pets may misunderstand the word punishment as opposed to your explanation in like 3,000 words in this book. So what is punishment? What isn't punishment?
Well, I think the big thing that I was trying to say in my Instagram post was to help dog trainers recognize that the public's understanding of punishment is different than the behavior scientists' understanding of punishment. What I mean by that is in behavior, when you punish something, what you punish is the behavior. You punish the behavior of digging in your garden, or you punish the behavior of barking at night or whatever. But most people don't realize that, and the public generally tends to punish the dog, the student. And often what that does is it hurts you in two ways. It doesn't punish the correct behavior in most cases, and it also often destroys your relationship in some ways. And so the best example that I gave in that Instagram post was a person comes home and walks in and sees that their dog has torn up the carpet, broken a lamp, done some destruction in the house, and the dog runs up to greet you. And the person goes, bad dog, and hits them on the nose. The problem with that is the dog destroyed your living room hours ago. And all that you've done by saying bad dog is taught the dog to not greet you at the door anymore. The punishment worked. It's just it punished the wrong behavior. The behavior the dog was doing at the time was happily saying hello to you. And now in the future, they're afraid to come and say hello to you. And it doesn't necessarily teach the dog good habits. It doesn't teach them not to destroy the room. And so one of the challenges I was really directing my statement to professional dog trainers and saying we have to be sensitive to the fact that the general public doesn't really understand that word because we use the word very differently in the common vernacular.
All right. Now, they will understand that word because we're having this conversation. And, of course, I agree with everything you just said, but you also said punishment decreases the likelihood that a punished behavior will occur again in the future. And you just said when you walk into the room and you punish the dog, the punishment worked. It worked for the wrong thing for all the wrong reasons, as you also described. But I think that punishment doesn't always decrease the likelihood that a punished behavior will occur again, because here in your example, you, in fact, may have made it more likely because you're creating a more anxious dog. So if the dog has separation anxiety, what you've done by yelling at the dog the moment you walk in is a couple of things. Yes, maybe training the dog not to come to you, training the dog to look like those dogs in the videos that we always see. That dog looks guilty. No, the dog doesn't look guilty, right? The dog is just afraid. Yeah, the dog is just afraid to come to you. And you've only maybe even increased the dog's anxiety, but you've not solved the problem. You've not punished a behavior that will occur again in the future, if you understand.
I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is actually absolutely right, but the statement about punishment decreases the frequency of the behavior in the future, that is the scientific definition. If it doesn't decrease the frequency of the behavior in the future, it's not called punishment. It isn't a punisher. It's just abuse. It's inhumane. It's cruel. It does other things. But that's the scientific definition of punishment, and so that's why I stated it that way. And all that we say in science is, if it doesn't make the behavior go away, it turns out that wasn't a punisher for that behavior. You were just being cruel. You were just being mean.
So it's a matter of semantics, and it's also, to your point now, it's a matter of being mean. So
that's what I think.
All right. So should we ever, is there ever a circumstance that it's appropriate to punish our pets for doing something?
That's a great question, and it can become a semantic issue, and I want to try to stay away from the semantic conversation, although that was the point of my Instagram post, was just trying to help people understand that there are lots of different definitions to these words, and so we have to be careful when someone says, I will never, ever punish my dog, or I will never, ever punish behavior. Because part of the problem is, if behavior disappears, punishment is probably occurring, but a lot of it has to do with the environment. And so one of the things that positive reinforcement trainers like me try to teach is it's not so much about telling a dog that what they did was bad. It's about showing them what you would like them to do instead. What's a preferred behavior? The likelihood is if the dog tore up the furniture, they were doing it either because they were anxious, they were frustrated, or they were bored, they were looking for a chew toy. And so oftentimes what we do as positive reinforcement trainers is we go into someone's home and say, let's look at what's happening here and let's find an alternative behavior that would be acceptable for you to do when the dog is feeling anxious, when the dog is feeling frustrated. And more importantly, how can we set the environment up so that they're not frustrated, so that they're not feeling anxious, so that they're more relaxed? And that way you have a happier dog, and you don't have the unwanted behavior.
Wow. A lot there. Ken Ramirez, if you can't tell, he's taught. Have you kept count as to how many people, dog trainers, professionals, God, that you've influenced? Not to mention marine mammal trainers and so many others. It must be in the thousands, Ken.
I'm sure of it easily because of the I've been teaching for a really long time, and I've had lots of students. So, yes, thousands is easily the number.
All right. Well, now that number jumped to 2 million because of what you just said here on the radio. Ken Ramirez is with us, and we'll be right back on WGN. Steve Dale back with you on WGN Radio. I'm honored to have with us Ken Ramirez. Ken Ramirez trains others to train. That's one of the things he does. He's the chief training officer and executive vice president of Karen Pryor Clicker Training, and he is also the author of, what, about 150 books here on training?
Not that many. I have 3 books out. I've written a lot of articles, though, that's for sure, in a variety of publications.
Indeed you have, including peer-reviewed scientific kinds of stuff, and that is the level of expertise I'm talking about. What started all this was a video that I watched you do on Instagram, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is Ken Ramirez, and am I going to argue with Ken Ramirez about semantics? I mean, oh my gosh, I didn't know what to do. But I think that, because I know how often I get asked this question, people understand more and more the dog has an accident in the house. The cat, let's talk about other animals as well, thinks outside the litter box, and people want to stick the dog or the cat's nose in it. Well, that was 20 years ago. More and more people understand that's not the way to go. But then what do you do? And that is a part of your whole point, I suppose. Let's teach the pets what we want them to do. Punishment might, notice I said that word, might, in my opinion, And you'll tell me what yours is in a moment, but might, in my opinion, depending on the context, the circumstance, and your timing, teach the dog what you don't want, or cat, but it rarely, if ever, teaches them what you do want. Am right. I on track with that?
You are right on track with that. And maybe even more importantly is not only does it not teach them what you do want, but even if it works, even if the punishment does get rid of the behavior you don't like, it often creates what we call displacement behavior. If I can't do this, I'll do something else. And it, without you showing them what else to do, they create their own idea. And sometimes that's even worse. And it often has the potential of really hurting your relationship, breaking down trust, which is such a big part of having a pet, is having a good relationship with that pet.
Can you give me an example of what you mean by a displacement behavior as far as punishment goes?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that often happens is if you have several animals in the household and you punish the animal for, let's say, dirtying up the house, they may not dirty up the house, but what they may do instead is attack or pick a fight with the other pet that you have in your house. Or, you know, one of the other side effects of punishment is they learn, oh my goodness, I will never dirty up the house again when my owner is present, but I will do it when they're not. In other words, it teaches what people think of as sneaky behavior. And it's not sneaky behavior. They just know that when you're present, I get punished, and so I'll do it at other times. And so there are all sorts of side effects that happen where other bad behavior develops because of the punishment.
It reminds me of what I call the flower trick with cats. So this really did happen on the radio. At one point, someone called in and back in the day and said, my cat was jumping on the counters, and I fixed the problem. You're wrong, Steve. What you do is you scream at the cat, or whatever he said. It was something like that. And he literally took the cat by the scruff, you know, between the shoulder blades, picked the cat up by that scruff, looked the cat in the face and said, you're never doing that again. And he joyfully said the cat never did that again. I said, do me a favor. I want you to sprinkle some flour on the counter and do that before you leave the house in the morning. And then when you come home, let me know if there are footprints, perhaps on the flour. And of course, there were footprints on the flour. And the cat did exactly what you're suggesting. And exactly as you're suggesting, I remember, I haven't thought of this story in years. He called the cat sneaky, like all cats are, is what he said, because the cat would do it when he's not home. And the cat isn't being sneaky. The cat just found a way to do what he wanted to do. In the meantime, the relationship, I think you professionals call it a fallout sometimes. The relationship between the human-animal bond can be impacted by doing all this. But then how do you teach the dog or cat to do what you do want the dog or cat to do?
Part of it is what I think of as environmental setup, is you sort of arrange the environment so that for a period of time, the animal can't do it. The cat doesn't have access to the kitchen counter. You close off the kitchen for a period of time while you teach the cat other behaviors. And often what's the scientific answer to it is you kind of look at the function of the behavior. Why is the cat getting up on the counter? Is it because he's finding food? Is it because it allows him to see out the window? Is it because it's enriching and fun? And you try to find other activities that can replace that they can find food elsewhere, that they can see out the window in another way. And you teach them those behaviors. And then gradually, as they've learned the new replacement behavior, you can give them access to the kitchen again. You can give them access to the areas where they were being bad, so to speak, before. But it is an important aspect of preventing the behavior from happening, not from screaming and yelling and punishing the behavior, but from giving them other opportunities to be successful and reinforcing those so that doing those new behaviors are far more reinforcing. I think the other problem with punishment is it's very reinforcing for the punisher sometimes, that when you punish your child or punish your dog or punish your cat and you immediately see that behavior disappear in the moment, you feel like, oh, it worked. and it's very powerful. And so you end up repeating it again, not realizing the damage you're doing to that relationship.
I think that's a hugely important point. And people back in the day, especially, but even today, ask me about the television dog trainers that are on TV and they're not using positive reinforcement. They are punishing and focusing on punishment and being dominant over your dog and all of that. And what I try to point out is what you just said. Yes, in TV time, at the moment, you're seeing a difference. But long term, no, not at all. And with that, with the 40 seconds we have left or so, there are trainers that are out there still succeeding that are using punishment, relying on that, relying on this dominance theory that never was a theory in the first place, but still being very physical with dogs. And some people are still very much attracted to those trainers. What do you say to those people?
I often just say that the TV trainer that you see using that punishment, yes, they got results in that moment. But what you haven't seen is, like you suggested, is the long-term fallout and the harm that it's done to the relationship, other bad behaviors that it creates. There is a better way, and using positive reinforcement is very effective if you know how to do it. You just have to find the right trainer to help you.
And that's the trick, you know, because the right trainer isn't only helping the ultimately the dog, but needs to communicate with the human being who's working with the dog. It's all of that. Ken Ramirez, thank you so much for everything you do for dog training, for starters, for teaching me, as well as we pointed out, thousands of others. Good to talk to you again. Thank you so much. I feel like I just passed a course. I got continuing education here from Ken Ramirez 101. We all did. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks so much.
A couple of weeks ago, I was on the radio with John Williams. Let me rephrase that. King John Williams, something I always enjoy doing. And we were talking about lost dogs as a U.S. Representative Brad Schneider lost his Labrador Retriever, Jojo. Good news is, found the dog again. And in fact, I have several stories about all of this on my website, which is stevedale.tv. Check out those stories because they have something in common and some lessons learned, and I put those together. So lesson number one, never give up searching should you lose your dog. Number two, always microchip and update your family's contact information. If the contact information isn't right, it's like having a phone without a phone number. The microchip provider will never be able to find you because the information is incorrect. So they call a phone number that isn't yours anymore. So update that information. Include the community in the search. Use posters and always accept help from neighbors. Utilize local groups. They're out there in social media. For example, there's a group called Lost Dogs Illinois. So for those groups, and there are many of them, check them out, find them, and maybe they could help you to find your dog. And to the best of your ability, don't lose your dog in the first place. I know that sounds like, what? What kind of statement is he making now? Well, you know, sometimes people are in part responsible. You have a dog out in the backyard, and nobody's out there watching the dog. And then a squirrel comes, and the dog who you thought could never jump over that fence finds a way to jump over that fence. Or maybe the dog gets bored and starts to dig, and before you know it, has dug under the fence. And electronic-type fencing, most dogs don't break through it. But what if your dog is that one in a thousand that does? So there are some ways which we can prevent that. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, right here, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN.